I don't know why, if you understand why I say that, but having just returned from Germany with our family and living in Pasadena with Hal upstairs, you know, every older person over there, the kids call uncle or aunt. So to our kids, Hal was Uncle Hal, and I think he still is, because I saw Hal out here the other day and said to the kids, "Hey, I saw Uncle Hal." Or as a matter of fact, he saw one of our boys now that I think is taller than Hal is, and hiking around here, and he said he saw Uncle Hal too. So thank you, Uncle Hal. We appreciate the privilege of coming and sharing with your group here. By the way, I'm looking forward, Lord willing, next Wednesday, going back to Germany for about 5 weeks and ministering there again. This is really home to us, that is, Germany is, and I'm looking forward to that. Well, you're getting down toward the tail end of your conference, and I hope that we can hold out another 45 minutes or whatever. So stay with me, and don't snore, at least. You might disturb the person next to you. Okay, the subject, preparation for missions. I would like to touch on 4 points. Really, the first three I just want to touch on in passing and spend most of our time on the fourth point. But how do we prepare for the mission field? Now, you know, the field is the world. You've heard that. But I think for our purposes here this morning, we're thinking primarily in terms of a foreign mission field. Your roommate next door or down the hall from you, that's a mission field just as much as out there somewhere else. But we're thinking now in terms of foreign missions, how to prepare for it. Well, let me mention these 4 points. First, get on your heart that which is on God's heart. That I would put as number one. Get on your heart that which is on God's heart. Our number two, be sure the basics are built into your life. Number two, be sure the basics are built into your life. Number three, discover, develop, and use your spiritual gifts now. Discover, develop, and use your spiritual gifts now. And then the fourth point is the actual preparation of yourself for living and ministering in another language and culture. Preparation to live and minister in another language and culture. That's the fourth point. We'll spend most of our time, as I've mentioned, on that. All right, let's go back to just number one. Now, you've been getting this all week long. But get on your heart that which is on God's heart. And, of course, what is on God's heart? John 3:16, the best-known verse in the Bible, sums it up. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. The world. And not this physical world, but the world of people. Of souls, eternal souls. This is what's on God's heart. And we see this from Genesis to Revelation. God's interested in people. And we need to get this upon our heart. And I think Hal shared in the conference here on the Great Commission, where Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations. This is the thing we need to get on our heart. We need to ask ourselves, every earnest Christian, I think, should ask himself, you know, how am I fitting into what's on God's heart? Or how does what I am doing right now contribute to fulfilling the Great Commission? How does that all work out? Well, we might not always see the direct relationship, but is it contributing directly or indirectly to it? Do you have a world vision? Are you concerned about the 2 billion people who don't know about Christ today? Or the 800 million Chinese, most of whom don't know about Jesus Christ? And we could go down the list. Get this on your heart. You know, if we get a vision for the world, it'll keep us from getting ingrown, thinking that we are the only ones. We have all the answers. And this vision or the goal of reaching the world for Christ is something that takes the gifts and the abilities of every believer. You know, just a few can't do it. We're all members of a body, the scriptures say, and every member has a particular function, and you have a particular function. And I have a particular function. And we've got to fit together or the job will never get done. Well, we need to study the Word. We need to keep up on events. Pray over a map of the world. These things you've heard. But get on your heart what's on God's heart. And begin, of course, in Jerusalem and then work out. Let's go on to point two. Be sure the basics are built into your life. Well, you know what the basics are, I hope. I don't know that this conference you've emphasized the basics much. You probably have gotten that back in your area. Your time in the Word, your devotional life, the quiet time, scripture memory, Bible study, prayer, witnessing, fellowship. You know, these and some more are the basics. Now, why are they important? Well, they really form the foundation of my walk with God and my ministry. And I think some mistakenly think that, okay, now I have worked on the basics for a year or two, so I can graduate on to something else. But this never works out this way. The basics are the basics. A foundation remains a foundation. And I think some servants of God have missed out here in that they have neglected in later years the basics in their lives, and their ministries have suffered because of it. But these are things that are basic in the Scriptures, and we must continually work at them all the way along in our Christian life. You know, if it's difficult to maintain consistency in the basics here, what do you think it's going to be like if God sends you out there somewhere? Just last night I was with a couple, a terrific couple who had some NAV training and background, but they're out with the Wycliffe Bible Translators in one of the little tribes in the Amazon area of Brazil, way back in the jungles. And it's a very difficult situation. It's a small tribe. They've had a difficult time getting a breakthrough into the language, but they've got that now. And, well, it's discouraging. In many ways, it's been discouraging. And we asked them, we said, well, you know, how do you maintain your sanity back there? You're away from everybody else. You know, it's, what, a couple of hours by plane flight to the nearest missionary families, and they're just there with the Indians. And they said, well, the only way is the Word of God and prayer and getting out in the jungle and pouring out our hearts to God. This is the only thing that keeps us. And if they didn't have those things built into their lives before they went down to Amazon, I'm afraid they would be missionary casualties by now. But they're not. They've had disappointments and heartaches, but they're seeing a breakthrough, and I believe as they go back, they're on the verge of a real tremendous breakthrough in this particular tribe. But get these things built into your life. Okay, point three. Discover, develop, and use your spiritual gifts now. You know, there have been a lot of talk recently about the matter of spiritual gifts. And much of the emphasis perhaps is placed upon the more spectacular gifts. But do you know what your gift or gifts are? You know this. Well, how do you know this? We talked about members of the body, each having a function, a responsibility. Do you know what yours is? What your particular contribution is? Well, how do you find these things out? Let me just give you a few ideas. Certainly read over certain portions of Scripture that emphasize the gifts. And there are at least three, Romans 12, 1 Corinthians 12, Ephesians 4. Those are some of the main ones that go into the matter of God, the gifts that God and the Holy Spirit have given to the body of Christ. Now, I personally don't think that these are necessarily all the gifts, because I think there are perhaps some that are not mentioned there. For instance, I know some people that I believe have the gift of intercession. Now, we're all to pray for others and intercede, aren't we? But I think there are some that have a special gift, that I could tell you some amazing stories about people and the way they have a prayer burden. You remember Miss Pearl Good, Hal, out in Pasadena. If anyone has a gift of intercession, this woman certainly has had. Well, it's not mentioned in this list. And there are other gifts like this, perhaps. But you study those and see if you have one or more of these. And see how it fits in. What are you gifted at, though? What do you enjoy doing? What turns you on? What do you receive fulfillment in doing? Now, this won't necessarily tell you, but it can usually be a good key. In other words, you don't feel like a square peg in a round hole, you know. Where do you feel comfortable, or what do you feel comfortable doing? What has God blessed in the past in your life? The type of ministry, is it personal evangelism? Is it follow-up, you know, people? Now, we should all be engaged in many of these things, but what is the particular thing you feel comfortable in and God has blessed? Or, What do your friends, who really know you, spiritually minded friends I'm talking about, what do they say? It's a good idea to ask them. You know, what do you think my gifts are? And you'd be amazed, often, I think, of the consensus of opinion from friends who know you, but they'll agree, but you hadn't thought of that as a gift. But they'll agree. And often God can reveal in these ways what gift or gifts you have. And so, start using your gifts now and developing them. And, you know, gifts are not only in the area of direct ministry. The Bible tells about gifts of administration. Maybe God's given you a gift in that line. But we all need to work together. All right, let's go on to point four, which is the main point we want to talk about this morning. Prepare yourself for living and ministering in another language or culture. Before we actually get into the body of that, how can we prepare ourselves? Well, one way is to read up on books about cultural adaptations, cultural anthropology, this type of thing. There are all kinds of them. But some good ones by Eugene Nida, Customs and Culture. Another one by Eugene Nida, Message and Missions. Here's a good book by Peter Wagner called Frontiers of Missionary Strategy. You can get all kinds of excellent books these days on this matter of how to adapt to another culture and be effective for Christ. There are also periodicals. Missiology is one of them. It's a quarterly. And they have all kinds of articles. This one just came in this morning. The Missionary Language Learning Problem. Acculturation in a Post-Traditional Society, etc., etc. There's another one called the Interdenominational Foreign Missions Quarterly. That's very similar to this, and they have excellent articles from various parts of the world. But anyhow, these are just some books that you can get a hold of, and you go to any good Christian bookstore and start browsing around and ask the Lord to lead you maybe, and maybe get some personal recommendations, and read some of these books. That's one way of doing it. Another is to befriend a person from another country that's here in our land. Maybe a exchange student. Get to know them. Have them over. Learn about their countries, their way of thinking, their culture, what they do. And this is another way to get these things on your heart. And if you're interested in a particular country where, say, the navigators, or not only the navigators, maybe some other mission group, have a work, then perhaps kind of take one of these missionaries and adopt them as of special interest. Write to them. Give to them. Pray for them. And this is another way to create an interest in a particular area. I was talking to one of the fellows just before the meeting. He was interested primarily in Latin America. Well, all right, get a missionary down there, someone who's working, and correspond with them. This is a way. I know I did this when I was in the service during World War II. I used the money that I needed just for my necessary needs, and so I was making pretty good money then, and I asked God to lead me to some missionaries. There were some down in Mexico, and I was sending the rest of my money down to them. And I didn't know that one day God would send me out somewhere too, but that's what might happen when you start doing these things. But it's thrilling. Another way is to, of course, listen to some kind of lectures on the subject, and that's probably the least effective, and that's what you're going to get this morning, is kind of a lecture on these things. But pay attention anyway. All right. Living and ministering in another culture involves adaptations or adjustments. There are all kinds of adjustments. And probably the key to adjustments are right attitudes. And so I would say adjustments and attitudes are key to ministering and living and working in another culture. And so let's talk first about personal adjustments that you might have in living and working in another country or culture. The personal adjustment to the culture of the people, it's different. You ever hear of the term culture shock? Well, what's culture shock? Well, culture shock is the frustration of not understanding what's going on, of not being able to figure things out. Why? The normal props that I have depended on at home are knocked out. I don't have anything to fall back on. and you feel like you're dangling. It's kind of a helpless, frustrating feeling. And most everybody who goes into a new language or culture area experiences to one degree or another what they call culture shock. Now some, of course, learn to adapt and adjust quickly to it. And again, I say the key perhaps is a right attitude plus some preparation ahead of time where you can read some of these books on the adjustment to a culture will help you. But everyone experiences it to some degree or another. Culture shock. And you got to go to another country and culture with the attitude, it's not wrong, it's just different. You know, we Americans have the tendency, I think we're growing out of this, because our world is getting smaller all the time, and we're growing out of it, but we have the tendency to feel that our way is right, or superior, or this type of thing. You know, it may be a shock to you to know that few other peoples in the world feel that we as Americans are in any way superior, except perhaps in technology. They like our technology, but that's about all. The rest of you can go home. Because, they've been around a lot longer than we have. And why is our way any more superior to theirs? It isn't. It's just different. I know my first couple of terms in Germany, generally Americans were kind of liked, but they kind of considered us as young children, you know. And they said, everybody likes children, but nobody puts confidence in young children, you know. And they didn't have much confidence in Americans, in areas of, spiritual areas certainly, because all they knew at that time was really what Hollywood told them about America. This is the impression they had. Naturally, they're not going to have too much confidence, either in a worldview or politics or in religious matters or anything like this. Now, I don't think they feel that way now. Maybe they don't feel we're children anymore, but maybe they still don't have as much confidence as they might have. But I know, for instance, a German pastor asked me to translate from German into English a tape that he had made for Billy Graham. The team was over there and we were working with them, and it had to do with giving him kind of a background in Germany. So I took this tape and I translated it into English and talked back on another tape for him. And I brought it back to him, and he was one of the Christian leaders over there, and he was shocked. He says, you know, you're the first American that has ever kept his word, done what he said he would do. I was kind of surprised. And he said, you know, I've worked with a lot of Americans. I like them. But he says, you can't tell Americans anything. They'll always do what they want to do anyway. And this was his attitude. And so many Americans have gone over and, you know, and stuck their foot in their mouth, figuratively speaking, and really made a botch of things in not only Germany but in other countries. Now, most illustrations I'll be using naturally come from Europe or Germany because that's where I spent most of my time. But we can learn from other cultures. They've been around a lot longer than we have. Okay, this brings up the subject of anti-Americanism, which is not decreasing in the world today. I had the opportunity to observe a very definite change in attitudes, for instance, in the country of Sweden. The first couple of times I was in Sweden, you know, they would roll out the red carpet for anybody who's American. I remember some of the big battleships or aircraft carriers at the time would go up into Sweden. Man, the American sailors, they could go free on streetcars, go free to the zoos, anything else. Nothing too good for you Americans. But there was a sudden switch. And there was a definite anti-American attitude that developed in Sweden. Now, we won't go into the whys, but this is increasing in many parts of the world. And I think we must have a mature attitude toward our nationality, whatever it is. Of course, we're talking here to Americans mostly, but if you're from a different nationality, you must have a mature attitude about your own. It doesn't mean that you should be ashamed of being an American. You are an American. Certainly you shouldn't be ashamed of that. God made you an American. You can't change that. This will show up in many ways whether you want it to or not. The way you dress, the way you walk, the way you talk, it'll come out. But you don't have to display it. Be aware of the weaknesses of your country and of your culture, but don't run it down. For instance, there was a German fellow that was living with us for about a year and a half. And a sharp fellow that came to Christ over there, But he hadn't had any spiritual background in Germany. And so he kind of looked on things, German as being zero, zilch, you know. And I remember our German secretaries and all, and this young German fellow, they were in a discussion one day. And they said, well, don't you have any national pride, they were saying to him. And he says, no, sir. And he was running down his own country. Well, you don't run down your own country like this. And you don't run down the fact that you're an American. You appreciate some of the weaknesses of America, but you don't run it down. There have been times that I appreciated the fact that I was able to identify as a European. I remember one time coming in on an airplane at night over Dusseldorf. Now, Dusseldorf is the financial capital of the great Ruhr industrial area. And there were some drunk Americans on this plane. And, you know, I just kind of felt, well, I never heard of America. They were making a fool of themselves. And this lady, you know, calls the stewardess over. She says, pardon me, can you tell me what little town this is we're coming into? And it's the capital, industrial capital of the Ruhr, you know. And just this kind of naive way of acting. And obnoxious way. I hope Americans are learning a little better not to act that way. You've read the book or heard about it, The Ugly American, have you? Oh, that's another good book to read before going over. Don't be like that book says. Okay, and learn to accept graciously any anti-American remarks you might hear. You know, don't carry a chip on your shoulder. Just expect that you're going to hear some of these things. You don't have to defend everything the U.S. does. You're not there to represent the U.S. anyway. You're there to represent Jesus Christ, the kingdom of God, you know. And I can't defend everything my government does, just like nobody else can defend everything their government does. And if you had the same background they had, and from the same vantage point that you're seeing the situation, you would probably come up with the same conclusions they come up with. So don't criticize and say. Just remember their background is different. Now, you have a right to your political views, but be careful about expressing them. Political views can really get you in trouble in a foreign country, expressing them. Try to understand their point of view. Keep off of politics. Keep the relationships on a personal and spiritual basis, but not on a political basis. For instance, over in Germany, of course, a hot subject is often this whole Nazi business, World War II. Well, it's best to stay off of that. The older folk who lived through it, they can't explain it themselves. They don't know why and what had happened. The younger ones didn't experience it, so why discuss it with them? Just best to stay off of it. And once in a while, it'll come up where you have some real close friends, and they'll bring it up in a natural way. But you just stay off of those things usually, and you're better off. Don't fight the culture in your own heart. You know, adapt to it. If you fight it, you're going to get ulcers. And this is the tendency to want to fight it when you first go to any other new culture. At first, you think their ways are backwards. They're going about it the wrong way. For instance, like over in Germany, and I'm sure many other European countries, and probably other countries of the world, the tipping practice. We tip in America because we've gotten good service. That's generally the rule. Over there, you tip in order to get decent service, whether it's the garbage collector or what. You know, if you want decent service, you better start tipping him ahead of time. Well, now, this just rubbed against me, see? I wasn't going to do this kind of thing. And finally, I have to realize it's part of the system. You don't fight it. It's just their way of doing it. Talking to one of our fellows who just recently came back from Indonesia, he said out there, for instance, if you go into an office to get some papers done with your visa or something like this, there's a clerk who types things up. You always give her a little money to type the things up, and you get your work done. He says, I know some of the missionaries are, I'm not going to bribe, you know, these people to do this work. That's what they're paid for. They're supposed to do this. They're supposed to type this. Why should I bribe them? They don't get their work done either. But he says it's not bribery. It's not bribery. He says, their system is these girls are paid a very minimal salary. And this is part of the way they get their salary. It's just a natural thing. So don't fight it. It's different than we do it. But, you know, join the system. You're there. And it'll save a lot of ulcers. Try to identify with them in dress as much as possible. And now, I just got the other day from Germany about three mimeograph sheets that they give out to people who are coming over to kind of get them adapted to some of the culture changes. And one of them I noticed is quite interesting, talking about the men wearing undershirts or T-shirts. You know, it says, don't come with your American T-shirts with a T. You're identified as a foreigner right away. The only kind you got, you know, are the sleeveless kind. Well, get those or buy them over there. But this other is typical American. I'm going over next week, but I'm just on a short-term time. I'll probably keep my T-shirt on. But if I were going to live there, you know, for a while, forget it. These are things that identify you as foreign, and they're not necessary. You can stick out like a sore thumb. And in the matter of food, try to, you know, eat the kind of food that they serve as much as possible. And if you're in a married situation, the housewife, try to cook as much as possible like they do. Not that you don't have some things that you want to eat like back home. That's very natural, and they'll understand that too. But you go around, you don't go around in Germany, for instance, with hands in your pockets. You know, this is anathema over there. I remember the first time Billy Graham came over, and we had the privilege of working with him in his campaigns whenever he was over there. And here he is in the great big old Olympic Stadium in Berlin, you know, full 80,000 people, and he preached, and God had blessed, and their beloved Bishop Debelius was having the closing prayer. And there was Billy on the platform with his hands in his pocket, standing back while the bishop was praying. Boy, the papers wrote this up, you know. You just don't go around with hands in your pockets. It's the most disgraceful thing you could do. Well, now, every time you ever see Billy on TV, when he starts praying, it's like this. He learned that in Germany. He learned it the hard way. You go walking down the street, they walk with their hands behind their back, you know. They don't put them in their pockets. Well, these are kind of things that just are offensive to another culture. To us, it's no problem. Okay. And you'll see some who've gone out to these other countries come back wearing maybe a style glasses that are different than ours. Or they'll have an accent that's a little different. But gang, you can't give yourself to another people for a period of time without having some of it rub off. If you come back just like you went, you probably haven't given too much. And if you're going to give yourself to a people, it's going to have an effect upon you. And don't you criticize the country and the people. And this is so easy to do at times. You know, you get disgusted and things don't work right. And but we need to get this settled before we go to another country. Don't criticize. It's especially easy when Americans get together, you know, and maybe you go out to eat or someone's over. You kind of let down your hair, and so you start your gripes. Well, just determine before God you're not going to do this and get into this. And especially if you have a family, you know, here your kids are sitting around the table taking in all these gripes. And it comes out through them, too, the other kids in the whole neighborhood and this kind of thing. Just, well, this, of course, this is a good rule, not anywhere. Just don't complain and criticize. Sometimes I know you go out in a restaurant, and some Americans feel, you know, nobody around here understands anything. And so they'll start complaining. Oh, boy, you'd be surprised how many people understand when they're not supposed to. For instance, the last time I was back there, we had a pretty heavy schedule, and I was went into a sauna to relax. And so, you know, in a sauna, you can't tell a German from an American. So here this one German had been to the States, and he'd come back, and he was criticizing the States all over the place. Well, here I was. Of course, I understood everything he was saying. He didn't know it, but the same works the other way around. We don't know who's hearing and listening. And certainly, of course, God's hearing and listening, isn't he? So don't criticize. Adapt to their culture, but on the other hand, don't go overboard. In other words, don't go native. Now, I know some that have tried this. For instance, one of our own gang, when they came over to Germany, he wanted to be German. And I remember we went around to visit some of the German leaders that I knew, and he said this to one of them. He says, I really want to be German. And this German leader laughed. He says, you can't. Impossible. You know? But this fellow did level off. You want to adapt, but you can't identify in every area. You want to understand. And I think that there's a good reason why God asks us to leave home, family, lands, and go to another culture. Because If we can adapt, we have certain advantages. If we become, as it were, quote, native, then we are limited by their limitations, and we can't see things as clearly as they can either. Adapt, but don't go native. You know, the greatest example of this, of course, is probably Jesus Christ himself, isn't it? He left heaven's glory. He came down here to this earth. You think he had some cultural adjustments and shocks and some things that he didn't like? Oh, my. Leaving an environment like that and coming down here, but yet you don't read in the scriptures that he was criticizing and moaning and groaning. He adapted perfectly, of course. And he's our example in this. We should distinguish between what is American, and that's a cultural distinction, and what is scriptural. And those are principles. And a lot of times we unconsciously think we're hanging on to something that's scriptural when it's really cultural. And we have to learn to make that distinction. And I think we should learn to make it right here at home, not just when we get out there, but especially out there. In other words, not everything that we think, well, church service at 11 o'clock Sunday morning, that's not scriptural. That's cultural. You know, they might want to do it some other time, and they do in many of these other countries. And then learn to distinguish what is scripturally essential and what is non-essential. And this gets into the whole area you might call of Christian liberties. For instance, this whole area of smoking or drinking or makeup, movies, and these things. Every culture has a different value on these things. And you've got to know how to fit that in. Here, I'm going back to Germany, you know. They drink beer like we drink Coca-Cola. Well, how do you square that up, see? All right, you have to find out what is scripturally essential and what is maybe non-essential, or what is culture. Okay, adjust to the language. Get the language well. And this is a must at almost any cost if you're going to minister in a country and live there. The language is a key to the heart and the soul of the people. You'll never understand the way of they think, their mentality, until you understand their language. You know, you can be given two sets of a given set of facts. A person in one culture, another person in another culture. You'll come up with different answers. Same facts, different answers. The whole mentality, the way of thinking is different. And this comes primarily through their culture, and of course the language is the key to the culture. Scriptural truth can really be communicated only in one's own language. They say, some say, well, man, the person speaks good English. A second language communicates to the mind, but the mother tongue communicates to the heart. And this is the difference. Now, there are a few who are truly bilingual people. There are some. George Sanchez is probably truly bilingual. Doesn't matter whether it's in Spanish or English. But most, this is not the case. One is definitely predominant, even if they speak well the other language. And the mother tongue is the language of the heart that you communicate. And when we're working with people and trying to lead them to Jesus Christ and build disciples out of them, this is heart language. And it's got to be in their own tongue to really be effective. Now, they are usually very tolerant the first couple of years that you minister in their country, and you struggle with the language and you butch it, you know, and they're tolerant. But if you're around several years and you're still making the same mistakes and having the same difficulty, they wonder, what are you here for? Are you really interested in us, or are you just interested in having a ministry, or what are you here for? Because if you're really interested in us, you're going to learn our language and our culture. So there is a tolerance that kind of wears off after the first couple of years. So get that language. And you can get tips on learning the language. There are many ways of doing this. Certain countries, like Germany, for instance, has tremendous schools. They call them Goethe Institutes. And it's a learning of the language and culture, excellent. You might as well forget trying to learn it over here. You can do it far better and quicker there. Now, other countries, they don't have a kind of a school situation like this for foreigners coming in. And you have to get it in other ways. Okay, adjustment to the culture, or to the climate, excuse me, to the climate. Now, this is not a real problem in Europe, but in many places in the Orient, it is. or in South America or Africa. It's a climatic adjustment. But still, there are some adjustments even to Europe. For instance, my first year over there, I lived in Southern California, you know, where we always saw the sunshine. Now you have smog. But when I was there, we saw sunshine. And I went over to Europe, arrived the beginning of October. And you know, I hardly saw the sun until spring. And for me, that first year, it was not only the culture shock, but the climate is depressing. I got used to it after about a year of it, but there are these adjustments that you have to make to the climate. Now, in some of these places in the tropics, it just saps the energy. Now, we have two or three families coming back right now on furlough from these tropical areas, and they just need to recuperate because their whole energy is sapped. Now, they need to learn to pace themselves better, probably. We come from a go-go culture here. And you can't necessarily go out in one of these tropical areas and go just like you do here. You just won't work. You run out of gas. And, you know, they have these midday siestas and all in some of these places, and there are reasons for it. There really are. You got to pace yourself, and you got to adjust to it. Adjust to the standard of living. Now, this will vary from country to country, whether it's a so-called developed country or a third world country. And I think we have made the mistake, perhaps, in some places that we've ministered, and I think we're learning to adjust to this. We have gone to another country that maybe the third world country, not a developed country, and we have set the same standard of ministry. I'm talking about standard of living and the style of ministry to our American culture. And they can't reproduce that back there among themselves. And I think we're learning to adjust to this. So learn how to adjust. You know, in most countries, it'll take you longer to do whatever you have to do. Live, do business, prepare meals, etc. Even in Europe, it'll take you longer than here, probably. Americans, and I think especially navigators, are known for doing things efficiently. You know, we like to do as efficiently as possible. But you know, efficiency is not a top-rated virtue in many other cultures. It just isn't. They're not interested in doing things more efficiently. I remember just before I went to Germany, there was a fellow. He was born into a German family as missionary children as a missionary child in China. Reared in China, but German culture. He came to the States and got into our office, you know, and everybody's going, "Here, Hans, here's a quicker way to do it. Here's a quicker way to do it." And finally, old Hans just burst out, "I don't want to know a quicker way to do it," you know. He wasn't interested in efficiency. He'd been from a different culture. And you'll find that too. Well, we can say a lot about that. Let's move on. Adjustment to fellow workers. This is one of the problems. Many missions, this is probably their number one problem of how to get along with their fellow workers, whether they're American or national. I'm happy to say that this is not our major problem, but it is still a problem, just getting along with people. And we need to have the proper attitude before we even go over. The scriptures say in Romans 12:18, "If it be possible, as much as lieth within you, live peaceably with all men." And we better learn it now. You know, before we're navigators or anything else, we're Christians, we're brothers and sisters in Christ. We're going to spend eternity together, and we better learn to get along down here, you know, because it's a long haul. But this is often a problem, just getting along with each other. And communications are the problem. Let me just touch on a couple of things in closing here. The adjustments in your own life. What about the emotional adjustments? First-term missionaries, this is one of the biggest problems. Loneliness, discouragement, frustration, these kinds of things. Because all the props are gone that you've leaned on all your life. You're often separated even from other staff. If you're going away, say, to a special language school situation, you're isolated. There's a lack of fruit at first. You've come out of a booming area back here in the States, perhaps, where God is blessed, and you've seen souls come to Christ and disciples raised up. And you know, you go over there and you're wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and no fruit. And it's hard, and it's struggling. This is really discouraging. The climate we mentioned, the culture can be just depressing. Sometimes you really experience satanic influence, like you do not hear perhaps at home, because you're invading a new territory of his, and he doesn't want to give ground. This is why probably single people should probably be sent best in pairs, for encouragement and mutual edification in this regard. And so be sure God's calling you if you're going out and not just an organization sending you. For instance, there's one area that's particularly difficult where we have an AV work, really just getting started, and there's another couple going out, and they wanted to be sure. Now, are you going out just because the navigators have asked you to go, or has God given you a real burden for this place? Because the difficulties were listed, and these people came back and said, well, I think God's placed this on our heart. But it was to prepare them for the difficulties lying ahead. You know, when I left Southern California, you know, there were people knocking on our doors, as it were, for help in the Christian life to grow. We had more than we could do. We were just busy all the time helping people. Got over to Europe, they didn't even know they had any needs, let alone they weren't knocking on the door. You know, what do? It can be discouraging. Okay, the physical and social adjustments. You need exercise. And there's less opportunity for this in most of these countries than in the States. You're hitting the language hard, and you can neglect the physical side. I did my first term over there. I didn't do anything to exercise except, you know, walk and this kind of thing. Now our groups, I know in Germany, they'll have ski retreats and this kind of thing where they take their students along with them. But you've got to keep up physically and pace yourself this way. You've got to have times of relaxation and recreation. Regular vacations. This is a requirement, at least I know in Europe we make. You've got to get at least 2 weeks away from your work, period. Completely away. And, you know, we want to see something done for God, and it's tough when we stay with it, but we can break emotionally and physically if we're not careful. We also need to watch a diet. And I know my first term over there, I was single and batching. And, you know, the diet was pretty starchy. We didn't have too much to live on in those days. And I kind of began to get blown up here a little bit. And when I got home, I took it off and learned to pace myself the next terms. But watch the diet. Adjustment in the spiritual life. We've already touched on this, the basics, how essential they are. And you're going to have a spiritual battle when you go to another country, probably like you do not have here. Now, you got a spiritual battle here. I think you hope you realize that, don't you? But it's even going to be greater out there. And then adjustments in family life, if you're a married person. Now, most of you, I assume, are single, but I assume most of you won't remain that way forever. And this is a problem of adjustment when you get to a foreign country. Traveling, especially with children, the hardest thing probably working in a foreign country is the effect on children and their schooling. This is the biggest problem that a family faces. How do you handle this matter of schooling? Well, now in Germany, for instance, our kids just go to the German school. But in some other countries, the school systems are not adequate, or the influences are not what they should be. The whole philosophy of education is something you wouldn't want to expose your kids to. Some send them away then to mission schools. Then the families are separated. It's a real problem if you're going to be giving your life on a foreign field. Now, kids have a real tough time. They have to adapt to two cultures, see? The culture of Americans, because they're going to come back to the States probably and go to school, and the German or whatever else it is. Now, most kids can make this adjustment, and if they do, they're further ahead because of it. But some have a difficult time of coping with this double culture, and it's difficult on them. Often the wife is isolated and so forth. Well, these are some of the things, and I really, our time is up, and I think we should close. There are adjustments in the ministry as well. Different ways of doing things. They're going to do it differently than you do here in the States. You know, and don't always harp back and say, well, now, back in Arizona, we did it this way. That national out there has no way of relating to Arizona. Learn what you have learned through your experience of ministry. But not necessarily the how. The how is going to be different out there. They're going to get the same results, but the how is going to be different. And so these are some of the areas in which you can adjust and prepare yourself for service overseas. Another way you can do is to get involved, I would say, in a minority culture right here in America. And we have the opportunity in America where some countries don't have this to our extent. We have minority cultures here, black, Chicano, etc., Indian, so forth. See how you fit in with another culture. Now, some of you are from these minority cultures. You have to adapt, and you know what adaption means. But you try to adapt the other way and get involved. I know we have these East Los Angeles training programs we've had the last few summers, mostly with the Spanish Americans over there. And this is a good experience to learn how to adapt to another culture. And we have them right here in our own country. You don't have to go even across the border. But anyhow, I trust some of these suggestions have been helpful. And I think that God is probably speaking to some hearts, not all of you, but some of you. And, you know, in the year or years ahead, you might find yourself out in some faraway country. And some of these hints might come in handy. And the Lord bless you as you complete your conference and evaluate what He's done in your life these days. Thank you, Hal.